Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers losing streak is over. They got rid of playing the bad teams and thought, well, let's play a good team and maybe we'll win. And it worked. They beat the Mets 2-0. Tony Gonsolin was great again. We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about Craig Kimbrel bouncing back from his rough outing against the Pirates. And we're going to talk about the Dodgers offense and kind of overall what they're doing this season, because some of it has been sneakily good and some of it is a little bit, if not worrisome, at least not what we've been looking for lately. So, lots to talk about. So, let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now, and that way you'll never miss a day, because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, I am Jeff Snyder. That's Vince Samperio. We are the co-hosts. We've both been Dodger fans for our entire lives, just like you have. We've also covered the Dodgers in the locker room and the press box. So we are not quite insiders, but we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. So again, please subscribe wherever you're watching or listening, and let's talk about the Dodgers. Vince, 2-0 win over the Mets, a good way to get off the schneid, as they say, after that frustrating three-game sweep at the hands of the mighty, mighty Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, Dodgers got a little bit of a break, I guess. Francisco Lindor got hurt, so he wasn't in the lineup. But, you know, I don't know that it would have made that much a difference, because they still had a lot of good hitters in that lineup, and those good hitters had no answer for any of the Dodgers pitchers.
Yeah, they came in averaging like 8.5 runs or something in their last week of games. Shout out to the Hotel Doors, I guess, for keeping Lindor off for at least one game. But, yeah, I mean, it's a nice bounce back win. You know, there's still probably some runs they left on the board, which we'll talk about later. But the big story is Tony Gonsolin. He's now the ERA leader in the National League for qualified starters. He continues to do what he's been doing the entire season and kind of his whole career, but now he's doing it a little bit differently. I mean, even last night he did it differently. They've been doing most of the season. Last night, a little bit more focused on the fastball, was having issues locating his off-speed pitches for strikes, but was still able to get some swings and misses. And he's looking like a bona fide all-star at this point, with a month, like 6 weeks to go until the all-star game, and a very early Cy Young candidate. So it's extremely exciting to see. And for at least for me, it feels a little more real now than it did before, especially because, like I said, he's doing it with less walks and more, you know, soft contact still there, which is not a bad thing, but it doesn't seem as much smoke and mirrors as it did early in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, Tony Gonsolin averaged 5.5 walks per 9 innings. This year, he's right at 3. 3 is a very manageable number. I think there's still room for his strikeout rate to improve. He's actually a little under a strikeout per inning, and his stuff is better. This game was kind of interesting. He said after the game that he was mostly relying on his fastball because he wasn't able to command his off speed like he wanted to. And I think maybe some of that is a case of extremely high standards for himself, because I looked at the numbers, because I hadn't noticed that during the game, like especially the curveball. I see the curveball. He struggled to throw for strikes, but the splitter, he threw it 28 times, 18 times for strikes, including 6 swings and misses. It was working really well, even if it wasn't perfect for him. And then the slider, he threw 12 of them and 9 of them for strikes. And so I think maybe it was mostly the curveball he's talking about there. But the fastball command was really good and it had good life, and he placed it really well. And like you said, it's like we're not even surprised anymore when he goes out and pitches well. It is nice to see him do this against a team like the Mets, who we know can hit. But you know, we've seen him do it against pretty much everybody he's gone up against. Tony Gonsolin has been outstanding pretty much every time out this year. And, you know, we saw it with Alex Wood in 2017 and then Ross Stripling in 2018 or 19, I can't remember. These guys who kind of come out of nowhere and end up on the All-Star team as Dodgers starting pitchers. And it seems like Tony Gonsolin is next in line to be the surprising Dodgers starter who makes the All-Star team.
Yeah, hopefully he fares better than most of those guys did in the actual All-Star game. But yeah, I mean,
we don't need to talk about that.
But he's a guy. I mean, we've talked about his ability to limit hard contact. I mean, he's up to the 96% hard hit percentage allowed. Average exit velocity is a little bit different. He's at 70 in the 71st percentile, but he's read all over in his baseball savant page. You know, he's preventing hard contact. He's preventing guys from getting base hits, from hitting for power, from basically everything. And when he can also prevent them from getting on base via walk, this is the result you get. Now, you know, it's Tony Gonsolin, a sub 1.6 ERA guy over the course of the season. Probably not. Is he going to have to at some point, you know, cut back, or are the Dodgers going to go to six starters? Probably. You know, I don't expect him to make 30 starts, but he's a guy who's definitely a sub 3 ERA pitcher. Definitely, you know, at the very least at this point, a number 3 starter, and pitching his way a little bit higher right now. And if he can continue this and keep this up and be that guy and get more confident, you know, he's only going to get more confident. He's only going to have more conviction in what he's trying to do. You know, if you see something working, you know, he talked to Ken Kershaw and talking about stealing strikes and knowing when to pitch, you know, learning how to pitch a little bit more, because remember, he didn't pitch in college. He came over here, or maybe he pitched a little bit, I don't remember, but he was a hitter, came over here, started pitching. He wasn't that far along, but he had good stuff. Now he's combining good stuff with learning how to pitch, and that's a dangerous combination.
Yeah, he was a two-way player in college. He did pitch, but yeah, I mean, he was never, if you look at his college stats, actually, he was never nearly as good in college as he is in the big leagues, and that's kind of the Dodgers' MO these days, is they find guys with really good stuff and turn them into really good pitchers. And Gonsolin, I was going to ask you, Vince, you know, you mentioned he's probably not going to end the season with a 1.6 ERA. If you had to guess right now, what do you think Tony Gonsolin's ERA is at the end of the season?
2.90.
Okay. So that would actually be, you know, worse than his career, really. You know, he's 2.93 his first year, 2.31 in 2020, the shortened season, 3.23 last year. Yeah, I think he's probably, with the head start he has, he's going to have some clunkers, but you know, I would expect him to be in the mid twos, you know, 2.6, 2.7, somewhere around there by the end of the year. And that'll play, especially for a guy who, regardless of where he is technically in the Dodger rotation, he's their, you know, fourth or fifth starter, really. And, you know, maybe sixth starter at some point this season, which we'll talk about in the next segment, talk more about that six-man rotation idea. But yeah, Tony Gonsolin is looking really, really good. And it's a nice luxury to have with Kershaw and Heaney both down. You know, that depth, obviously, the Dodgers came into the season not knowing if they were going to have any Trevor Bauer or anything. And so, you know, having a guy like Tony Gonsolin step up like this, 6-0, just giving you, I mean, and he's going deep-ish into games. He's going six innings every time, which isn't super deep, but from Tony Gonsolin, we will take six innings per start. It's a huge bonus. And while the quality isn't totally surprising to me, the quantity probably is.
Yeah, quantity definitely surprising. And it's one of those where you're looking forward to Gonsolin starts at this point, where, you know, I would always look forward to Walker starts, Julio starts, especially if I'm going to the game. And you still look forward to that, but now it's one of those where, I get to see Gonsolin. Now it's like, oh, I get to see Gonsolin. So that's a good shift too.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to come back in a minute. Tony Gonsolin wasn't the only guy to pitch. The Dodgers also had three relievers pitch. They all pitched really well. And we're going to talk about specifically Craig Kimbrell's bounce back effort and kind of the Dodgers' recent bullpen usage in general, and some hints that it might give us about their future plans for the starting pitchers. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it locked on Dodgers. With spring in the air, it's a time of renewal and growth, personally and professionally. As your small business grows, LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster and for free. Create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 810 million people. Then add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring so your network can help you find the right people to hire. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonMLB. That's linkedin.com/lockedonMLB to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Vince, we are back. But actually, first, we want to tell our listeners about a listener survey. We have an important favor to ask of all of you. We've put together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite Locked On podcasts even better. This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and don't like about Locked On podcasts. What you like is us. What you don't like is, I don't care, but you like us. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long, and everyone that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. To take our audience survey, go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Thank you for your help. All right, now we're back. And Craig Kimbrell, after blowing the save against the Pirates, his first time coming in with a one-run lead this season, and still his only time. And so then he had a couple days off that he was probably going to have those couple days off anyway. And then the Dodgers didn't have save situations because you don't get those when you never have a lead. But he came back in this game, came in with a 2-0 lead in the ninth inning, and, you know, didn't, I mean, he looked like Craig Kimbrell, right?
Yeah. I mean, as much as the Craig Kimbrell we've seen this year, the most, you know, I had not seen Craig Kimbrell pitch that often before. So, you know, I couldn't even have told you what a secondary pitch was, I don't think, before the season. And now that we know what it is, but yeah, he's looked the most comfortable he's looked, the most confident he's looked. You know, for me, confidence is when you're throwing fastballs kind of down the middle, which is what he did to get the last out, to get the strikeout, 97. Maybe mislocation, but still 97 with conviction, the way he throws, the way he gets extension, probably looks like 101, 102 and, you know, gassed it right by him. So it was good to see, you know, it looked like he had a sense of relief after the game, a little bit of a smirk, a little bit of a smile, and yeah, good to see. And it's one of those where I want to feel comfortable in the ninth inning again. And this was that first step.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked, I think it was after the blown save, we talked about how his biggest issue seems to be that fastball command, because everything else plays off the fastball. And if he can't throw the fastball where he wants to, it's hard to get into a count where he can throw the curveball. And what he did tonight was command that fastball. He threw it eight times. Eight of his 12 pitches were fastballs, and seven of those eight were strikes. He had three called strikes, a swing and miss, the one that ended the game, two foul balls, and a flyout. And so, you know, we will take that all day, because that allows, even though the four curveballs he threw, only three of them were, or only one of them was a strike. The other three were balls. But because he commanded that fastball, he was able to throw a couple curveballs to Pete Alonso, trying to get him to chase. And then when Alonso didn't chase, Kimbrell came right back with the fastball and said, okay, I'll just get you with that. And he did. He got the job done. And it all comes down to throwing that fastball first. So I guess one question for you, Vince, that we could talk about is, you know, Kimbrell got those 2 days off. He was going to have those 2 days off anyway, and he came back and he looked really good. And what we heard on the broadcast was that he's been working on some specific things, and whatever he worked on seemed to work. Do you think the 2 days off also helped? And if you're Dave Roberts, you know, knowing Kimbrell only threw 12 pitches in this game, do you throw him right back out there on Friday night on no day's rest and say, all right, let's put that stuff to use again? Or do you ease into it and give him a day or two off before his next appearance?
I think you can throw him right back in there. And I think because it's a mechanical issue, or seemingly was a mechanical issue, you know, the stuff was there, you know, the fastball was there. I think just the last outing, he maybe didn't hit 97, but he said 97 every other outing. You know, the curveball has had that spike, but if you know he can't throw the fastball for a strike, you're not going to chase that curveball. And then that's when you get into a little bit of no man's land, because you don't know exactly what's coming. And, you know, you can sit a little bit more fastball because he's going to have to bring it to you at some point. So I think it's a little bit more mechanical. I think at this point, you know, it's a long game for the Dodgers. You know, they're playing for October, but it's also one of those where you need to know if Kimbrell can do this now, because you need to know before July if you need to go make a trade, or if you need to figure something else out. Or like I said, if he's not going to be the guy, then you got to start looking for that guy. And I think they got to throw him right back in there.
Yeah, I agree. I saw some people on social media kind of panicking. Why would you bring in Craig Kimbrel here? And the fact is, this is how the Dodgers play. When it's June or April or May or even August, the Dodgers are figuring out October all the time. And so you have to know, and the Dodgers know, their best bullpen has a dominant Craig Kimbrel at the back of it. Just like the reason they kept running Max Muncy out there is because the Dodgers know their best lineup has Max Muncy being productive. And so you got to do what it takes to get him productive. You got to do the same thing with Craig Kimbrel because, you know, I'm not going to say that Dodgers can't win the World Series without a productive Craig Kimbrel, but having a dominant closer definitely helps you in the postseason. And so it definitely makes sense for them to get there. And, you know, talking about that idea of the Dodgers figuring things out for October, they're also figuring things out for the rest of the season and the immediate future. And, you know, we talked the other day about the possibility of the Dodgers going to a six-man rotation. And I think you and I both came down in favor of it, if for no other reason than that you're going to have six really good starters. So if all six of those guys are healthy, there's no reason not to go with a six-man rotation. And one thing we've seen that might hint that they're heading that direction is we've seen a few different relievers have multi-inning stints. We saw Brusdar Graterol, Evan Phillips, and Yency Almonte, at least those three have thrown multiple innings in a game. And if you do go with a six-man rotation in a couple of weeks when the rosters, assuming they finally do contract down to only 13 pitchers, that's only seven relievers. And so you are going to have situations where you might need a guy every once in a while to go two innings. And do you feel like that, what they've been doing, is in preparation for a six-man rotation?
It feels like it, and it feels like it, and it feels like they've done it in those situations where they would, you know, do it. And when they, if they did have a six man, you know, your starter goes six innings. If you can just get six innings out of your starter, two innings from a reliever, and then, you know, you only need one more reliever for the last inning, you're using three relievers, three pitchers. You know, even if you have seven relievers, you're using two one night, two the next night, two the next night. I mean, theoretically, you could last and have guys have multiple days off if everything went to plan. Now, everything's not always going to go to plan. You're not always going to have guys that go two innings, but I think it's nice to have it built up. You know, I'm sure David Price, if he sticks around, they'll try to build him up to at least go to two innings. Graterol's already there. Phillips is already there. Almonte is already there. You know, I think guys like Vesia probably won't ever get there because just the nature of how he throws. But I think, you know, Phil Bickford's a guy that can do it. You know, I think the lefties are the ones that wouldn't do it, like Ferguson and Vesia and maybe Brewer. But other than that, I mean, all these guys have had done the length before and they're doing it now. So I definitely think it's in preparation for at least a trial of six starters. And trying to go that route, six innings from one, two from the other, and then one to close it out.
Yeah, and all things considered, I'm excited to see that because I do think a six-man rotation for health reasons and because they have six good starters, it just makes a ton of sense. And if they can trust each of these starters to give them six innings, I mean, you don't even need seven relievers at that point. If you got the six-inning starter and then a two-inning reliever and your closer, boom, get it done. And, you know, there will probably occasionally be a game where they only have to throw eight innings because they might lose a game on the road once in a while. But, you know, overall, I like that approach. And I'm looking forward to, we always joke that these decisions are usually made by injuries. And so we may never get the six-man rotation because they may not ever have all six of them healthy at once. But maybe this is as good a time for this update as any that Clayton Kershaw and Andrew Heaney are both starting their rehab assignments this weekend. Kershaw in Rancho Cucamonga on Sunday, Heaney with Oklahoma City. I think they're actually playing in Texas, but Heaney, we don't know. I didn't see any word of how many rehab starts they expect Heaney to need. I did see that they only expect Kershaw to need one, which would mean he pitches in Cucamonga this weekend. And if all goes well, he's back with the Dodgers next weekend against the Giants. And that would be awesome. Max Muncy is also starting his rehab stint, and they explicitly didn't say how long they expect that to be. I think rehab stints are allowed to be 20 days. And so I wouldn't be shocked if Muncy gets that full 20 days, gets him at bats in a lower pressure situation, which we talked about before when he was struggling and talked about how the Dodgers couldn't actually send him to the minors, but put him on the IL, give him a few days to clear his head, a few days to work on some things at Camelback Ranch, and then a couple weeks in the minor leagues getting some swings. Might be exactly what the doctor ordered, but I did, you know, just, I guess, tying in this one last update, Kevin Pillar did go on the injured list with a fractured shoulder, and they called up Zach McKinstry to replace him. We made a case yesterday for Eddie Alvarez, but if they do, expect Muncy back in the next couple weeks, it kind of makes sense that you would go with McKinstry as a short-term stopgap instead of adding Eddie Alvarez to the 40-man roster right now, just for a couple week stopgap, even though he can be optioned. I still wouldn't have hated that idea, but I understand why they went with McKinstry. But yeah, seems like the cavalry is on its way back from the injured list, both in the form of Muncy and two really good starting pitchers. So hopefully things are going to get really good for the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's the plan, man.
So we're going to come back in a minute and talk about the offense. Some guys who have some sneakily surprising numbers and some guys who are struggling a little bit. So thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And please keep it locked on Dodgers. It's time for me to talk about Built Bar, which is my favorite part of every episode because I love Built Bar. They're delicious. They're nutritious. Those things rhyme and they're both good things. Whatever you want, when you need a snack, you can go grab a candy bar. You're going to feel bad about the candy bar. Even if it tastes really good, the better it tastes, the worse you're going to feel. Built Bar is the opposite. The better it tastes, the more you think, man, I can't believe this is healthy. And it's just going to make you happy. They also have these Built Puffs that are like chocolate-covered marshmallows. They have the birthday cake puffs. I've been eating some of those. They sent me a box of those. Those are pretty good. Even the churro puffs, a lot of different good puff flavors, a lot of great Built Bar flavors. And like I said, they're all low calorie, low carb, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, all the good stuff, none of the bad stuff. If you know what you like, order what you like. If you don't know what you like, they do a mix box where they'll send you a bunch of different flavors and you can try it out and then you will know what you like. So the next time you can order specifically just what you want. Whatever you order, just go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. All right, we are back. One last segment. We want to talk a little bit about the offense. And what spurred this was I happened to notice that after Thursday night's game, which, by the way, thank you, Dodgers, for giving me a victory for my birthday. I appreciate it. Didn't get 11 runs in the first inning like I got last year on my birthday. But last year I had the decency to show up at the stadium. Today I just stayed home and watched it with my family. But, you know, I'll take a 2-0 win over the Mets. We'll take it. But after this game, Mookie Betts OPS now starts with a 1 and then a decimal point. He's at 1.008. I call that 1008. I don't know how you pronounce OPS, but I'd say 1008. And for how Mookie Betts started, that is remarkable because anything over 900 is really good anyway. Not just good considering a bad start. It's good. And being over 1,000, with how bad he started, it showed you how on fire he's been the last month and a half. And it's crazy. Batting average is 310, OPS 1,008. Mookie Betts continues to astound me.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at his OPS on May 1st, and it was 720, which was not great, but good enough for what this season has been, you know, with offense down. He didn't hit his first home run until April 20th. And now he's the National League leader in home runs. And, you know, he was hitting 189 on April 23rd, hitting 209, you know, a couple of days later. Now he's up to over 300, OPS over 1,000. Like I said, leading the league in home runs, leading the league in runs scored. And it's been absolutely ridiculous to watch. And it's now to the point where, you know, you expect Mookie Betts to do something every time he's up. And he's, I don't know, we've seen Mookie really good so far in his tenure with the Dodgers. We haven't seen him this good. Even in 2020, when he finished second in MVP, it was a little disjointed, I would say. You know, it was kind of hot streak. This is now a month long or almost 6 week long hot streak that he's been riding on. And yeah, this is the Mookie Betts that you trade for. This is the Mookie Betts that you signed to a long-term deal. And this is the Mookie Betts that's fun to watch. And you know, one of those guys, he's becoming one of those guys again, where no matter who you are, if you're a fan of baseball and that he's up at the plate, you're going to stop and watch.
Yeah, absolutely. His OPS after April 26th was 646. He was batting 190 with a 317 slugging percentage. He's now batting 310, and his slugging percentage is over 600. Like, that, it's crazy. One guy who's kind of going the opposite direction, and just it hasn't been too long. In fact, I'm not worried at all. And maybe that is the point of bringing it up. Freddie Freeman has been struggling, but I'm not worried. Like, he doesn't look bad. He looks like he's almost there. And especially after what we saw in the NLCS against the Dodgers last year, Freeman, when he struck at what, 7 straight strikeouts?
Yeah, 7, yeah.
And they were talking to him before a game and asked him, what are you trying to do to break out of this funk? And he said, I'm doing the same thing I've been doing for 11 years because that always works for me eventually. And then he came out and he couldn't get out any again. You know, he was dominant the rest of that postseason. That's Freddie Freeman. And so even though right now it looks like it's been, I mean, really the last, I mean, he's been getting some hits, but he's not hitting the ball super hard. Hasn't had an extra base hit. I guess he had one double, but in his last 8 games, 1 extra base hit and only 4 hits total. Like, and that's not what we expect from Freeman. His batting average has gone from 312 on May 26th. It's down to 289. For me, all that tells me is, wow, Freddie's about to break out.
Yeah, and this is a guy, you know, Freddie Freeman's a guy we've talked about since they first signed him, where a more consistent hitter. You know, when we compared him directly to Corey Seager, Corey Seager's a guy who was hot and cold. And, you know, the cold streaks lasted a little longer. The hot streaks lasted pretty long. And when he was hot, he was hot. And then Freddie Freeman, when we talked about him, it's that consistency. You know, he's going to, at the end of the season, you know, he's going to be hitting 300. You know, he's going to give you, you know, 30, 40 doubles, whatever the case. You know, he's going to give you 20, 30 home runs and everything else. And this is just one of those times where he's not giving you that production, but everyone else around him is. And the Dodgers have continued, you know, other than the Pirates series, the Dodgers have continued to be good despite him not hitting as well. You know, the biggest thing in that Pirates series too was him not hitting, because we talked about last week how he was hitting like 450 with runners in scoring position. I think it's down to 370 now, which is, you know, still ridiculous. We knew he was not going to hit 450 or whatever the entire season, so it's probably regulating itself. But yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned about Freddie Freeman because realistically, he's a guy, like I said, at the end of the year, he's going to be hitting 300. So he's hitting 289 now. That means the rest of the year, he's going to be hitting above 300, and that's all we can ask for.
Yep. And in this game, he failed to come through a couple times with runners on base, including hitting into a big double play with runners on first and second. And, you know, that was the only time the Dodgers got thrown out on the bases tonight. It wasn't really their fault. You know, there's plenty to talk about. It was first and second. You had Mookie on first and Lux on second. Freeman hits a ground ball to the second baseman. Mookie stops so he doesn't run into the tag. Second baseman plays it well, runs Mookie back towards first, and then throws to first, gets Freddie, and then they get Mookie in the rundown. Mookie's immediately pointing at Lux, hey, you need to score on this if I'm in a rundown. Once Lux ran a third and started going towards home, they threw to home, and Lux ended up almost getting back to third base. He was actually initially called safe and then overturned on the replay. And I think if Lux had been able to see the future and know that the throw to the catcher was going to be a bad throw, it took the catcher a few feet to his right away from home plate and it short hopped him. It wasn't a good throw. I think if Lux had been able to see that, he would have immediately on the throw turned around and sprinted back to third, and he would have gotten back maybe even without a throw. But I think once he had rounded third, he was so far. And once they threw to home, he kind of got into, okay, I'm in a pickle mode and prepared himself to try somehow. I mean, once you're in a rundown against a major league team, you're out most of the time, you know, and when you're as athletic and fast as Gavin Lux, there's always a slight chance. And like we saw, like I said, he almost got back, but he didn't. But I don't know. That's the only thing that when I watched it, that I felt like maybe he could have done different, but even that, I think it might've required almost a little bit of reading minds, and maybe the mindset there should be, okay, as soon as I'm going to come hard around third, draw the throw, and as soon as I see the guy throwing, I'm going to sprint back to third, because that, I think that is your best chance there, is just commit immediately as soon as the throw and make them make 2 throws to get you out at third. I don't know if he would have been safe. Well, he definitely would have been safe because of the throw being bad. I don't know if that in general is the right approach or not.
It's one of those where, you know, there was a lot going on, and I saw people complaining about Dino Ebel. That's not anything on Dino Ebel. because once Lux is like in the rundown, he's on his own pretty much, because Dino could be yelling whatever. Lux probably not hearing it. There's a lot going on. You're not, you know, listening for your third base coach at that point. I think the play is exactly what you said. You're dead sprint home until you see a throw. And then it just depends. If you're more than halfway or like three quarters of the way there, you just continue on and hope that you can be safe. If you're halfway or less, I think you're dead stop, turn around and sprint back to third. Because now at that point, Mookie's going to be safe no matter which way he goes. He goes back to first or moves to second. And I think it's one of those things where it was going to be a double play no matter what. And I think Lux, I mean, just, I don't know. It just looked bad from the other angle, because as soon as he noticed that the ball was a bad throw, he just kind of froze. And I thought if he would have went back right there, he would have been safe easily, because even with him dancing a little bit and sticking around and then going back, he still was almost safe. So he was just caught in no man's land. It didn't look as great, but like I said, in that heat of the moment, at the end of the day, I'm not going to fault him too much. But I do think that's something that's happened before when Mookie does this, when he gets in rundowns. We've seen it where, you know, he's the one directing traffic. I think they should have – this is a tough situation. Doesn't happen that often, but when it does happen, I think, you know, they need to have a little bit better. All right, what's the plan? What am I supposed to do? But it's hard to plan for.
Yeah, and this one is different because Lux was the third out. Like, there's a lot of value.
He's playing for the run or safe. Like,
yeah,
there's no, like, you're not trying to get Mookie to second.
Yeah, most of the time there's value in staying in the rundown so that the other guys can get going. But when you're the third out, you know, because the throw was bad, I think if Lux had committed either way, committed to home or committed to third immediately, he would have been safe either way because of the bad throw. But in the end, like we said, it was a double play. And if they had managed to get out of that with only one out, they would have stolen something. Fact is, Freddie Freeman hit a new double play there. But Gavin Lux has been hitting well lately, and his OPS is up to 719, which isn't anything to write home about. And it would be better, you know, the batting average is up to 280. He's hitting really well, not hitting for much power. And I don't know if that's something to be concerned about or not. I hope Gavin Lux hasn't just turned into a singles hitter who occasionally shoot one to the gap for a double, because I mean, he hit the farthest home run for the Dodgers for the whole year a couple of years ago, and he only has one home run this year. Yeah, we've seen him hit some big home runs. I'm not expecting him to be a 30 home run guy, but hopefully some of that power will start to come. But at least he's getting that confidence back at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of, you know, he's been a young guy. There's an article recently about him kind of figuring things out, and you know, kind of his first time failing when he came to the majors. I mean, you think about it, he's from Wisconsin, so there's not as much talent as some of these other states already. You know, high school, drafted out of high school, so to that point, he had probably never really failed at baseball. The minors, he didn't really fail too much. Comes to the majors, been going through adjustments. He's been trying to find himself. You know, I think it's one of those where if he can figure out this singles thing, taking pitches, you know, getting into good counts, I think that's like step one. And then step two would be, okay, now you're going to step into it with some power and it could be something special, and what kind of what we expected from Lux coming up. So it's been a process, but I do think he's taking a step towards the right way. We just got to be patient as Dodger fans.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's it for today, except Vince, I have a quiz for you. Something that popped in my head today and I thought it would be fun. You remember the game you and I went to together last year against the Giants when Will Smith hit the walk-off home run for the Dodgers. The Dodgers had five pitchers that day. How many of them can you name?
Did Andre Jackson start that one?
Nope.
Or did Gonsolin start that one?
No. Well, then, somebody made his major league debut that day.
Oh, Josiah started it.
Josiah didn't start. He came in the third inning.
Yeah, I don't remember. I would be just naming names at this point. So
Darian Nunez started the game. And then Josiah Gray, the two of them knocked down six innings. And then the seventh was Garrett Clevenger and Joe Kelly combined. And then Kelly pitched the eighth. And the winning pitcher who pitched the ninth inning, this is the reason I thought of it. Any guesses?
No.
Jimmy Scherfe. Remember when Jimmy Scherfe was a Dodger?
Yeah, that's when we had all the Oregon boys on the team.
Vaguely remember Jimmy Scherfe. Scherfe's name popped in my when I saw Chasen Shreve pitching and thought Shreve's kind of like Scherfe. And I went, oh, I remember that guy. And I was like, I'm pretty sure he got the win in that game. And it turns out he did. So anyway, remembering good times. But the Dodgers picked up a game on both the Padres and Giants with this win against the Mets. A couple more games against the Mets coming up this weekend. Hopefully the Dodgers can get a few more wins and come out of the weekend back on a hot streak. So that's going to do it for us today. Thank you all for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out the Locked On MLB podcast. MLB expert Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, brings humor, passion, and a unique perspective on every team and the biggest stories around the league. Follow the number one daily league-wide podcast, Locked On MLB, on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. If you're not listening to or watching us every day, we would love if you would add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. If you have friends or family who love the Dodgers as much as you do, please tell them about the show. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog. And the DMs are open in all of those places, so you can reach out to us whenever you want. You can also reach out to us via email if you want to. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. Or our phone number for voicemails or text messages is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a good one.